Good afternoon, everyone. This is Ted Chaconas, the Chief Medical Officer here on the Oakland campus. And I wanted to welcome both our Oakland community that has been part of all of these town halls that we've had over the last several months, as well as our San Francisco colleagues that are joining us today for what I consider to be a very special and important town hall today. It's one that we're titling Colliding Pandemics: Loss, Grief, and Race During COVID-19. This town hall today is not going to be like our typical COVID-19 town halls in the past. This is a meeting today where we're really devoting our discussion to this intersection of what are really two pandemics that we're facing as a nation. One pandemic that is new began 3 or 4 months ago with this novel coronavirus. And then a second pandemic, which is not novel and which has really been a burden that I think our country has tragically allowed to persist for generations. And I think recognizing the importance and the recent events that have taken place, I think we want to have some really mindful and thoughtful discussion around that. Before I pass the gavel or the microphone on to Mike Anderson and Jamie Phillips, I also want to just reiterate that really in my, over 30 years of being a member of this community on the Oakland campus, I've really never seen a stronger example of just the remarkable teamwork that we're capable of. And that really reflects our profound commitment to our community. And certainly, you know, I think we share that commitment with our colleagues across the Bay in San Francisco. But again, I think this is a very special community we're a part of, and I really feel honored to represent and be a leader of this organization and to be able to host this town hall today. With that, I think I'd like to go ahead and introduce Mike Anderson, the president of the UCSF Benioff Children's Hospitals, as well as Jamie Phillips, our chief operating officer of the Children's Hospitals. Mike?
Yeah, Ted, thank you very much. It's rare that I'm at a loss for words, but kicking off this very special town hall meeting, and I'm sorry, I'm in transit today, so I'm not at the hospital. Recent incidents have really deeply moved and heartbroken me and so many members of our community, our doctors, our nurses, our therapists, and most importantly, our patients and our staff. And this is truly, as Ted said, an equal, if not more impactful, public health crisis. The death of Mr. Floyd and structural racism and the people that have just taken to the streets to cry out no more have moved me professionally and personally. What is equally moving, however, is the fact that I talk about it all the time: healthy children, healthy communities, and a healthy world. Benioff Children's Hospitals and UCSF doesn't run from these social matters or run from these public health crises. We lean in. We stand as a beacon for our families and our children to say this cannot stand. It's not time for just flowery speech or anything political. It's time for us to take a stand on behalf of our patients and our families. And this is a very tense and trying time in our region and our country, but that time calls for leadership. It calls for like-minded individuals standing up and saying, we are better than this. Our patients and families deserve better, and we will continue to be a beacon of hope for those kids, our family, and our colleagues. Today marks the start of an ongoing cross-Bay dialogue. As I've said in many venues during COVID, this is not a one and done, this is an ongoing dialogue. And I just want to thank the panelists and everyone that put this very special town hall together. So with that, I'd like Jamie Phillips, our Chief Operating Officer, to share some thoughts as well.
Thank you, Mike. As we have watched what's happening across the United States, it is clear that racism and racial disparities are, amongst other things, a public health crisis. It has personally impacted me as an African American. I'm a wife of a Black man and a mother of Black children. To the people that are hurting, I want you to know we all hear you, and my heart is deeply out to all of us, to you and others. We should all feel safe regardless of our skin color. As you all know, our team represents many diverse individuals. And this sadly say, some of us has actually experienced discrimination personally. Diversity and inclusiveness unites us together and to our communities that we are serving. We will always be an advocate for safety, dignity, and the well-being of all children. Our firsthand experience reminds us that some children do not have the same opportunities to live healthy lives as others. And it is our duty and responsibility to fight for those inequities. As a result, with all these turmoils that are going on in our lives, we have to use this platform to stand for inclusion, equity in our community and in our workforce. Our voices are stronger together, and we must stand as one team. We have a deep legacy in both campuses, Oakland and San Francisco, of serving the disenfranchised and all those in need. We are a source of hope for people and families, and also a safety. As an institution, we need to own our duty to our community to address racial inequities, and that includes in the workforce. We have a diversity, equity, inclusion, Cross Bay committee of hundreds of individuals on both campuses that are committed to help us in creating a space for brave conversations of what we're having today, but also to better serve our community that we're serving. Thank you for joining us.
Great. Thank you so much. At this point, what I'd like to do is transition to our panelists for today. I think George Weiss, who is our Vice President of Clinical Operations across the two children's hospitals, will be moderating that panel discussion, again, focused on this deeper impact of the systemic and structural racism and racial violence. George, do you want to go ahead and kick things off with our panelists?
Absolutely. I'm really honored to be able to hold this conversation. Personally, very important to me as a proud Puerto Rican and a brother to and an uncle to two Black men. I'm really proud for us to be able to sit together and hold this important discussion. I'm really honored to have such profound panelists to speak on this topic who provide extraordinary leadership in our organization. I'm joined by Dr. Marcia Treadwell, who is professor of psychiatry and pediatrics and is the co-chair for the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Council. Santoy Trotter, who is a program manager for our school-based behavioral health programs and the co-chair of the Trauma-Informed Care Committee. And Dr. Dana Long, who is a member of the Benioff Children's Hospital Open Medical Staff and is co-director for our Center for Child and Community Health. So welcome all three of you to this. Thank you so much for making the time to join in this discussion. To start off, I thought it would be best, since you each play such a critical role in providing leadership to these different bodies, the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Council, the Trauma-Informed Care Committee, and the Center for Child and Community Health, if you could each provide a brief overview of those efforts. And we can start with Dr. Treadwell.
Thank you so much, George. In 2017, the senior leadership at the Benioff Children's Hospitals was not very diverse with regard to gender, as well as race and ethnicity. So two health administration fellows, as well as senior leaders, executive sponsors, did some investigation into diversity, equity, and inclusion best practices and recommended the formation of the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee. And the senior leadership did embrace this, which we are very grateful for. The goal of the committee was to bring intention, thoughtfulness, and a structured approach to achieve equity and inclusion at the Benioff Children's Hospitals. Even though the pride values of UCSF do have a pillar of diversity and one of respect, there definitely were and our issues in relationship to the lack of an organizational structure and foundation to support the diversity work. So a committee, as Jamie mentioned, of 65 individuals from both campuses came together. The two co-chairs are myself and Brandy Hollinger, an interim co-chair while Brandy is on maternity leave, is Kim Murphy. So I'll briefly read our mission statement. To build an institution that is rooted in justice and equity, to nurture an inclusive culture, and to cultivate and implement effective strategies for the just and equitable provision of education, discovery, and patient care. And the committee is comprised of three task force teams, a patient care task force team, an education task force team, and a workforce task force team. All of those committees are co-chaired by individuals from both sides of the Bay. So I'll stop there because I know we'll have an opportunity to talk in a little more detail about some of our work, but that's the overview of the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee.
Thank you. Santoy, do you mind going next?
Thank you, George, and just thank you everyone for being here. There's a song that keeps going through my mind, which is, "We who believe in freedom cannot rest." And I just appreciate the ways that we're working towards freedom and justice here as a children's hospital community. The Trauma-Informed Care Committee, Trauma-Informed Care System realizes the widespread impact of trauma and understands a potential path for recovery. It recognizes the signs and symptoms of trauma in clients and families and staff and others involved within the system. It responds by fully integrating knowledge about trauma into policies, procedures, and practices, and seeks to actively resist re-traumatization and harm. Our BCHO Trauma-Informed Care Committee mission is to protect and advance the healing of our patients and families, our staff, and our whole system by understanding and reducing the impact of trauma on the UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital community and those we serve. We're a multidisciplinary community. I am one of the co-chairs, and our chaplain, Jillian Murphy Stevens, is also a co-chair. And we have representation from oncology, behavioral health, FQHC, our spiritual services, medical social work, and others throughout our hospital system. Our mission is really rooted in trauma-informed principles, which are understanding trauma and stress, cultural humility and responsiveness. And I want to name and acknowledge that cultural humility was created right here in our BCHO organization by Dr. Melanie Trevelyan and Dr. Jan Murray Garcia, and that we had people come together in collective and groups and stories come together after the Rodney King violence in 1992. And we're in a similar time right now. The other principles are safety and stability, compassion and dependability, collaboration and empowerment, and resiliency and recovery. I'm really glad to be here with everyone today.
Thank you very much. Dr. Long?
So, like Santoy just said, I'm really grateful to be on this panel and that we as an institution are brave enough to speak up and not be silent during these times because they are painful and they affect all of us and the communities that we are fortunate enough to work with. So in the Bay Area, what we do know is that race, social, economic status are affecting our lifespans, and that in both Oakland and San Francisco, living simply 7, 8, 9 miles apart can lead to differences in health for our children, such that what we're seeing is that these differences of about 8 or 9 miles can cause a 2 times increased likelihood of being premature, can cause a 7 times more likelihood to be born in poverty, 3 times a likelihood to be behind on your vaccines, 4 times less likely to read at grade level, and can actually lead to a reduction of life expectancy by at least 14 years. And so seeing these disparities and the pervasiveness on both sides of the Bay really motivated a group of us to come together in order to form the UCSF Center for Child and Community Health. And our mission is to be a positive force for all children to live full and vibrant, healthy lives. And we accomplish this by really focusing on 3 core pillars. And those pillars are clinical transformation to drive innovation in clinical care to reduce preventable differences in children's health, health equity science by expanding knowledge through research with and for community impacted by disparities, and then system thought leadership on a local, regional, and national level through education, advocacy, and collective action to transform systems and promote equity. We have a really extensive portfolio of programs, including programs that are focusing on COVID-19, on asthma, on ACEs, on trauma, determinants of health, mental health, HIV, immigration health, teen pregnancy, child development, early literacy, and workforce development. So thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate the conversation that we got to start over the weekend. Ian wanted to open up this conversation with the question of what do you feel is important to understand, consider, and or speak to in this moment? And I'll let either one of you start.
I'll start. I think that what's important is what Santoy mentioned a moment ago, that we have wisdom to draw upon. Again, Dr. Melanie Turvalon and Dr. Jamari Garcia were here, and cultural humility is a powerful tool for all of us to use in enhancing culturally responsive care. But I think the other important thing to think about is, and if we draw on that, we need to be honest with ourselves. And that honesty with ourselves tells us that as empathetic as we can be with individuals who we take care of, the patients and families, we have to have that same humility when we are working with our colleagues. And it's important when, you're dealing with a family in a crisis, and the next day the social worker of color walks by you and you don't acknowledge them. That is painful. And the intent doesn't matter. Microaggressions are painful, but we have to start with that awareness of what it is that we're doing, of how we are mindful or not about our relationships with people who we serve as well as people who we work with, because we're kidding ourselves if we don't know that how we interact with one another impacts how we interact with the people who put their trust and their faith in us, the children and families of the hospitals that we're working at.
So when I think about what is important to understand right now at this moment, it is both deeply personal and professional. I have spent the last couple days periodically weeping tears as I try to hold together my three Black boys, the rest of my family, and my work family. I think that there is a mandate for us all to speak, that there is not the luxury of silence anymore, and recognizing that speaking takes energy and time, and that many of us are exhausted. What we are seeing unfolding in this moment is that COVID is traumatic, and it is affecting every level of society, but it also has really unmasked the disparities in America that we as people of color have long known. Trauma is intergenerational and it impacts our health. What we are seeing, I do believe, is this understanding of the biologic consequences of history and the understanding, in my opinion, that slavery itself got underneath our skin as African Americans and had a profound biologic, physiologic impact on our neuroendocrine system, such that we carry that history with us. We carry it within our bones. It's within our DNA, literally, when we look at epigenetics. And so this history of slavery and racism, I, as a Black person, I feel it. And as a mother, I feel it. So that when I see, whether it's George Floyd or Ahmaud Arbery or Eric Garner, when I see those murders, for me, it feels like that is my son, that could be my son, because at any given moment, it could be any of our children. And this understanding that, and I don't want to speak for Jamie or Marsha or Santoy, but this understanding that every single day as Black people in this country, we hold our breath, right? We hold our breath because we don't know what will happen to our Black boys when they're out there in the world, and that the world is unkind to them. And so the anger and the fear and the pain, it's so palpable right now for Black people because it runs so deep, because it is written into our epigenetic changes, and the way in which we show up in the world is informed by our biology and our history.
Santoy, you're muted.
Thank you. Just to add on to what Dr. Treadwell and Dr. Long spoke to, I just want to add in terms of this moment, structural racism and it is an intergenerational and chronic trauma, and it impacts the health of Black people, but it also saps the strength of our whole society, right? And so over the last few weeks, we've witnessed a collective call for justice and outrage in response to the traumatic murder of George Floyd in Minnesota, Breonna Taylor in Kentucky, Tony McDade, who was a trans Black man in Florida, and also Ahmaud Arbery in my home state of Georgia, right? And while these events took place in other states and other systems, we need to acknowledge that systemic racism is baked into every system in our country, right? It is rooted in a part of every system, including our healthcare system and including right here in our organization, right? And so cultural humility and accountability, right, is a principle of trauma-informed system. But in order to do that, we need to look at our own policies and our own policies towards racial equity. What are our own hiring practices? What's our training and support for staff? Are we looking at implicit bias? And are we truly partnering with the communities that we serve? This is a compound trauma, and it is impacting specifically Black people right now, the pain and rage and sorrow and anxiety that we're feeling, but it is a responsibility for all of us because it saps and depletes the resources that we all have when there's racism and structural racism. And also, it's important to recognize that our whole system is stressed this moment, as Dana said, with COVID-19. But you know, structural and historical racism and white supremacy is a chronic trauma that is impacting us every day. And as a mental health provider in West Oakland and East Oakland with Black and Brown communities, one fact that pains me every morning when I wake up is knowing that the suicide rate for Black boys has raised, you know, ages 13 to 15 is on the increase, right? Depression is on the increase. And these are young people who grew up in the time of social media in the 2016, if we think about just 4 years ago. And, you know, the impact of, you know, of viewing, right, Black men, Black boys, Black women murdered, you know, that, you know, usually we have families that can be protective, and now this information is everywhere, and it's not new. We have a wider awareness of it. We have more opportunities to do something about it. But that viewing that and what that says about Black bodies and the value of Black bodies and Black boys and Black girls has an impact on the mental health of not only young people and adolescents and the teens and communities that we serve, but also on all of us.
Thank you. I just want to hold for a second in the space. Is there anything else, Dr. Treadwell or Dr. Long, that you also want to add into this before I go into the next question?
I think that a summary statement of what Dr. Long and Santoy just said is that it's important to remember that this moment is not just this moment. This moment exists in hundreds of years of violence that has been perpetuated against Black and Brown people. And it's a difficult moment for us, but we just have to realize that, again, as was mentioned, it's affected all of us. It's a part of who we are as a country. And it's not just a moment in time, but represents the fabric of this society. So it's going to take a lot to change it.
Thank you. I think that difficultness, we talked about the challenge of conversation, and I'm curious to hear from you, what do you think is important as we work to try to hold conversations and aim to come together in solidarity and support of our colleagues, patients, and families?
One of the things that I love best about working at UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital Oakland is my colleagues and their willingness to be awkward and uncomfortable and have hard conversations. And what I feel as if we need is for folks to understand that this is not a Black people problem, right? You have Black panelists right now, and I think it's because we have decided that we are willing to stand up and to share our hearts and our minds, but the solution is not going to come from the four Black faces on this panel, right? The solution is an all of us solution, and the solution needs to come from our white colleagues as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, the one thing that is a frustration to me is that when these things happen, yes, we react, but then what's the action of what we're going to do in the aftermath? And within our organization, diversity is just beyond doing a training, just beyond, you know, having this conversation. And it's really, how do we hold each other accountable to action? And we need to have that and hold each other accountable. If the leadership's not meeting up to what we feel, then that needs to be presented. If the doctors aren't giving, you know, what we feel is equity and care, then that needs, those names need to come up. It's to the point where transparency needs to happen and we can't push it under the rug. And I think that's, you know, unfortunately our society is like, it's a repetitive. You know, it's the same thing. We're doing the same thing back from 1965. Why are we still here? And so it's really, as leaders, everyone on this call, all 800 of us that's on this call, have to figure out what action are we going to take, but also hold people accountable when you see it, particularly in the workplace. Like, how are we going to hold people accountable if they're not aligning to our values and what we want as a diverse, inclusive culture?
Absolutely. I'm so glad to hear you say that, Jamie. And I think that was one of what, you know, as panelists, that we wanted to not only have this town hall, but that there is a deep commitment and that each of us, you know, can do something from where we are. I want to also just acknowledge that there are pockets of expertise within our institution. You know, I think people do need tools to talk about race. Race is a great trauma and wound and injury for many of us. And so it is a difficult, we're, you know, as a nation, we're not well-versed in speaking about it and talking about it. And we are afraid of hurting someone or harming one another. And I just do appreciate in behavioral health, our CBC and EIS partners that came together and we've had training on white fragility, training on implicit bias, training on with Alicia Garza from Black Lives Matter, Dr. Ken Hardy, who is an African-American psychologist, that in order to, you know, there's a strong effort that is needed to undo the smog of racism that we're all in and breathing all the time, right? No matter who we are, we're getting the same messages, and that there's specific work that needs to be done to undo some of that so that we are treating all of our patients fairly, all of our mothers and parents fairly. So with equity and justice, and also in our hiring practices. So I'm so glad to hear the commitment from leadership, and may we, you know, all 761 of us in our hearts take this moment to recommit to make a just and fair world for everyone.
Dr. Treadwell, what about individuals that are in a work unit together or interacting with a family and feeling uncomfortable and not knowing how to navigate, or you know, any thoughts there to help in creating a space where the conversation might be held or not, if it's the right thing, you know?
I think that what has been alluded to so far is that there are tools available that can help us to have these difficult conversations. And the people who start these conversations need to be honored as being courageous about bringing things up. And the tools to combat implicit bias, microaggressions, again, there are many tools out there. We're here to begin to roll those out so that we can create safe spaces where an individual can bring up a concern and someone can say something, and even if they are, quote, not correct or hurt someone's feelings, that that other person can say something to them back. And so the conversation is back and forth. That is where we can begin to have some healing and some movement forward. But as long as we're afraid to have those conversations, and as long as we don't draw on the many tools that are out there that we can use to help us with those conversations, if they never happen, then we can't ever move forward. So we within the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee, we have small groups where we're able to talk with one another. We've developed trust over time. We say difficult things to one another, as Santoy put it out about the group she's a part of. And we need to see that across the whole hospital. We need to see everyone obtain the tools, be coached in the tools, and then we need to have safe spaces and brave spaces where we share and come together and have these conversations so that we can move forward.
This term brave space has been a lot of discussion through the weekend and even today. Would either of you like to provide a little additional information about what does it mean to say a brave space or to try to cultivate a brave space?
So as an African-American woman who has been educated in a very privileged in America, mostly white institutions, I feel as if what we learn is to have many different faces, right? We call it code switching, or that we are able to say and act one way around family and friends, and then another way when we feel as if those situations are unsafe. And I think that what Dr. Treadwell is getting at is those brave spaces actually allow ourselves to bring ourselves fully into the situations in which we are, in which we find ourselves, and to actually be able to speak our mind when we see that there are injustices, or when we see that, well, you know, even within this own institution, I came here as a medical student, and there were two African-American male attendings, two fantastic attendings who I would trust my children's life to. And 20 years later, we still have two African-American male attendings. And being able to speak to that and to talk about, well, why is that the case? That in 20 years, we haven't been able to recruit, retain, or hire more. And those conversations are often hard to have because they challenge structural notions. And I think that at this point, they're necessary. And so that's what a brave space means.
And just to add one piece, I think we need to, you know, brave space also comes out of like, that there is not a safe space. So we need to create brave spaces. But I wanna also challenge us as a community to know that, yes, there's some such importance around the one-on-one interactions and the communication that we can have as a community. And to undo structural racism, we need structural equity, right? We need to look at our policies. We need to put things in place that there is both the interpersonal piece. And oftentimes when we talk about race and racism, we narrow it down to kind of being kinder to one another and being nicer to one another. And that is so important. And I work with amazing people here at Children's Hospital. It's what I love about being here. I've been here for a long time and I love every individual I work with. And we have to know that the racism is inside our structure, our systems, our policies in any organization. And so we need to address it both on an interpersonal level and also on a structural level.
I'm seeing a lot of really brave comments to the side here, which relates to this third question. One is acknowledging our reality of our own organization to the comments that Jamie made earlier and Dr. Long just spoke to and our opportunities to improve both with our representation, our care, our services, et cetera. And each of you are involved in critical groups that people also are interested in learning more about, how to be a part of. So could you share a little bit more about what are some of the next steps for the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee, or the Trauma-Informed Care Committee, and the Center for Child and Community Health, so that folks might be aware of that and also understand how they might be able to either support, amplify, or access those resources?
The Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee did conduct a needs assessment survey at the end of last year, and those results are currently under consideration under senior leadership as well as within the steering committee of the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee. And we are going to be gathering as a committee at the end of June to establish a strategic plan that will be informed by the results of the needs assessment. And the needs assessment did point out that there's a sense of not belonging among particularly African Americans. There's a sense of inability to advance in careers, and that has been named over and over. If you aren't a white person, and again, if you're particularly a Black or a brown person, there's a difficulty in this institution, the Binney of Children's Hospitals, to advance in your career. There's a concern that there needs to be more of a reflection across the senior leadership on down throughout the whole institution of our communities, so that having at the leadership level primarily white people is problematic. So our group will be coming together and making recommendations and putting forward what actions we can take to address the individual side of things, interpersonal issues that are causing the sense of lack of belonging, or actual a lack of belonging, or you could also call it code switching when people have to be one way at work and can be a different way at home, as well as the structural part of this, where we do have to really change at all levels. What is the face of the people, and what are the voices at the table? So the next steps for the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee are really to translate the results of our needs assessment into action. And I definitely got a lot of skepticism, I'll be honest, not from that committee, but as far as this town hall, it cannot be this one meeting that was catalyzed by a tragic event. It needs to be understood that this needs to continue, and it needs to be real, and people across BCH need to see commitment from the leadership that there is going to be a real change here.
And just to share from the Trauma-Informed Care Committee, we want to collaborate with the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee. We are working on putting together resources for managers and teams. We know that these conversations are important to have on the whole hospital level, but also important to have with those in which we are already in relationship with, right, with our team members. And so we're working to put together resources, both direct related to cultural humility and accountability, and also related to the other traumas of this moment, including COVID-19 and the impact on communities of loss and illness. We also want to continue to promote training for managers for new employee orientation, and to consult with leaders who want to increase their trauma-informed care practices and trauma-informed systems practices. And we invite you to reach out to myself or Jillian Murphy-Stevens if you're interested in joining and being a part of the committee. And I think to also know that there's we have everyone we need to do the work we need to do. I am both a longstanding employee of this hospital and also a parent whose child gets services here in our FQ. And I trust that we have everyone we need to do what we need to do right now.
From the perspective of the Center for Child and Community Health, we really are resting on these three core pillars of clinical transformation, research, and system thought leadership. So for a clinical transformation, we've been engaging deeply with our federally qualified health centers community. We have been working to identify our families who are the most food insecure and to have food delivered to them. We are distributing masks to our community members and recently made the pivot to make sure that the young people who are protesting have masks and to distribute masks to them. We have been working with the Family Care Network, who's been making sure that basic supplies and PPE are available to the HIV positive community. We've also been working with our CHAMPS program and to make sure that our CHAMP graduates have the basic supplies that they need right now. We've been doing research, as you guys know, on the universality of ACEs and trauma and scaling those innovations to support our community clinics as they start screening for stress, including racism and discrimination, and helping our community clinics get resources to our population. We are doing research both within the hospital. You might have seen a recent link to a survey about the mental health and well-being of staff, and we're sending a similar survey around social determinants of health to our community. I do think it's important that we are in solidarity right now and working together. And there's this haiku poem that's always in my head. And the haiku poem is, "The barn burned down, and now I can see the moon." And so I'm thinking that we are burning right now, but we're going to have the ability to see the moon if we work together.
Okay. Well, I thank you both, all three of you, for this conversation and really the initiation or continuation of this conversation, because I know we have a team coming together Cross Bay to plan for the next discussion as a Cross Bay Town Hall to dig deeper into this discussion and to address the kind of transparency and accountability with respect to the next steps and action. There is a lot of great and important feedback coming up through the chat, as well as some questions that were provided ahead of time. Dr. Jaconis is going to turn this back over to you to facilitate the question and answer section as well for this next phase of this.
Thank you so much, George. I just want to say this has been a very powerful and moving last 20 minutes for me personally, and I think for so many of the people who are on this town hall today. I almost hate to pivot to what are really kind of more COVID-related questions and answers, as well as some of the other questions that came in before today's town hall, George. So if you'd like, we can certainly continue this discussion with our panelist group for a bit longer. Or I'm also happy to pivot, George. I don't know how you're feeling about that.
I think there are some questions that have come up. Go ahead, Jamie.
George, I feel like we do need to continue with the dialogue. I think it's going to COVID probably is not ideal, and we have about 15 minutes left. I mean, there's a lot of folks on the chatting. I don't know how we open it for other people to speak if they want to be heard at this moment. I don't know how that happens on the IT background piece of it, but if you want to say some words on here versus the chat, I guess you can raise your hand and then we can add. Is that correct, Joseph or Hector? Is that correct?
They can raise their hands, and then Joseph or Hector can also, or they can write a question in the chat.
Okay.
I was reviewing the chat, and there were a few themes that popped out for me that I saw. And I think there were a number of points around the topic raised with respect to representation and diversity across all levels of leadership.
Yeah, I can talk to that if you like.
Please.
So particularly in my experience in life as a healthcare administrator, gosh, I'm almost going on 30 years. I can't believe it. I turn 50 next year. I'm usually one of few to tell you the truth. My Last place, I was the only Black female. There was no Black males in senior leadership roles. Here, I actually have more hope because besides myself, the system COO, she's a Black female. We have our new Vice Chancellor, Human Resources, Black male. And we also have several Hispanic leaders throughout our organization. I really believe UCSF takes this seriously. To tell you the truth, yesterday Mark Laird called me and he apologized. He apologized for his race of what has happened. That's the first time that's ever happened in my entire career that a senior leader at that level called me. And that was powerful to me and it meant a lot. And I don't want to be the only one in a room. I don't want to be the only one in a room in a board meeting. And to do this, we have to grow our talent. There's a responsibility of individuals because at the end of the day, we all know we have to perform to get to these leadership roles. But there's also a responsibility to find the candidates. And I know one of the things we're going to work on is to do a talent assessment and really start digging to see where there are people that are interested in leadership roles. How do we get them prepared for it, particularly people of color? How do they get mentored and coached? Because that's the only way I got to where I am today. I was mentored and coached by white men, by people of color. It was a village to get me to break through the glass ceiling. And that's going to happen to every leader that wants to go into administration, into these leadership roles. You have to break the glass ceiling and have people well-rounded to help you get there. So that's our commitment of what we need to develop. And the diversity, equity, inclusion team needs to hold our feet to the fire administration to do that. But we can. I mean, we have some great people of color in various different races and leadership roles. Sometimes I feel we don't let people know that enough because it does exist, but we can always do better. But we do take this seriously and that we need to look at it differently to make a change.
Thank you. The next theme I saw in there is just holding and acknowledging differences of power. And many of the individuals on this call might be in positions where they don't feel as safe or comfortable being able to speak up in moments and may not have as much power in that voice. And I think there was one piece of wanting to be able to recognize that. And then the other piece that I saw as a theme in the comments from folks was about recognizing the powerful and important diversity and representation at the front lines of the services that we provide, and really extraordinary individuals representing many different races and communities and helping to support our mission. So I saw those comments and wanting to make sure that we are making their efforts visible and having them participate as speakers, which was something that the panelists and I talked about this last weekend and can be used to inform our thinking about next discussions. I saw a couple of kind of resource-based questions, and I think some folks wanted a little more information around brave spaces, and I think some of that might be about acknowledging privilege and for whom it's easier to create a brave space versus those who cannot, and also so let's start there, and then there's a resource question. So what are thoughts about brave spaces and holding and acknowledging that some have more privilege with respect to having a brave space? Thanks, Dr. Treffel.
Yeah. I think it's been touched on a bit that these conversations can't be just among people of color. We need every level of leadership and white people as a part of these conversations. We talk about it all the time as African Americans, and we We know the issues. We need for people, white people again, to take the time to spend time with us, all of us together, again, having these conversations and acknowledging the privilege. As has been said, it can't be emphasized enough. It can't be done by people of color. We have to have allies. There are fabulous allies in Children's Hospital, in the children's hospitals, but we really need, again, everyone to step up. And at the moment, I'd actually like to give a shout out to Jamie and administration and George that we have an administrative assistant and a program manager of the diversity program now. Again, the programs fall flat when it's totally volunteer, in your own time, you know, work on these things. We have begun to accelerate quite a bit with Henry Ocampo being a part of our team. Sadie Brown is a fabulous administrative assistant, and we really appreciate administration support. That shows where, you know, that puts your money where your mouth is. We need more. We need to continue to have more to really show that this work is valued. And so again, what Jamie mentioned, ways that we can show people that we really value them and their contributions in this way would be really important. And then the last thing I want to point out is we really, what came up in the needs assessment and how what has come up is ensuring that there isn't a disparity between the campuses. There aren't disparities between the campuses. And I would challenge, again, senior leadership to listen when those concerns are brought up and really be honest with yourselves as to whether or not something, what can be done about that if it's pointed out to you that there are disparities, again, between the campuses. And that came up in the needs assessment. And it came up prior to us coming together today where I was asked to mention that. And I feel that it's really important to do that.
Yeah, I think, you know, and it's interesting, I'm watching the comments and there's this overlapping piece about the ability to hold a hard conversation, the ability to hold and speak to a hard reality or observation or truth. And I think there's a need to be able to find and I'm going to speak this one more. I'm half white, half Puerto Rican, to individuals who experience more privilege and thus don't experience as much discomfort. Sometimes there's a need to sit in some discomfort. That's okay. And that means that I might not know the right words to say. It might mean that I'm hearing a truth that causes me some pain and some discomfort. And I need to hold it. And I need to be able to be brave in that space, to be able to have that conversation, to admit that I'm not sure about exactly what to say, but my heart thinks this, and I want to be able to ask this question or say this thing from the heart. And I'm open to getting feedback about, you know, if there's a different way to say this. But I think a piece of this is finding the ability to have those harder conversations, including looking honestly at a current situation and calling it for what it is and working towards improving upon or changing that. Let's see.
There's one other piece that I just want to bring to the forefront, and this hospital has been here during hard times. This hospital has a 100-year history of serving every single child, regardless of the ability to pay. And that our every intention is that we will be here for hundreds of years into the future. What we don't want is that for this to be an inflection point that diminishes. I had just come to this institution shortly after the Rodney King riots, where there were similar conversations. And then in some sense, some of the work on equity and cultural humility had been lost through the years, although there was a core that held true to it. That as we move forward, that we plan for long-term sustainability of our efforts so that it's not just a conversation today, but that we really think about how are we addressing these underlying principles, and we have a robust and ambitious and creative plan to partner with payers long-term into the future, so that not only can this institution continue to meet its mission of serving every single child, but that we move into a future where we're much more diverse, and that includes all of the staff here as well. And so making sure that sustainability is built into every discussion and plan from the beginning is important.
I have some closing kind of things to share that we all discussed before I get to that, either Santoy or Jamie or Dr. Treadwell, is there anything else that you wanted to say?
No, I don't have anything further, thank you. Okay.
Well, I can see, like me, everybody in this town hall is really grateful for this space, for this conversation, for this dialogue, and will join us as we continue this. And I think, like Mike, Ted, Jamie, Dr. Treadwell, Dr. Long, Santoy have spoken to, we're really working to try to cultivate a brave space for conversation. This includes an ability to reflect in support and solidarity that will be announced tomorrow, a Cross Bay Town Hall that's being planned for next week, and ongoing work focused on diversity, equity, and inclusion. As was said earlier, this moment that we sit in, it is not new. And it is big, and it is a painful topic for many. It means, as I just said earlier, that we're gonna find ourselves in uncomfortable situations, and we wanna encourage each other and support each other to nurture brave spaces where we can actually navigate through that discomfort to learn and consider new ways of supporting each other and our patients and our families. The Benioff Children's Hospital family has a deep culture of coming from the heart and with love to provide exceptional and extraordinary service and care. And we can draw on this resource and this truth in each other to support our next steps on this path. Dr. David R. Williams published a manuscript in the Journal of Health and Social Behavior entitled Miles to Go Before We Sleep, Racial Inequities in Health. And in this article, he spoke to the powerful harms racism and racial inequality have on health and the public health need to actually dismantle systemic and structural racism. Understanding this work is complex, takes determination and time. His title and manuscript reference Miles to Go Before I Sleep from a poem by Frost, which I'm going to read to you now as we all continue on this important journey together. And the poem's called Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it's queer to stop without a farmhouse near, between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake. The only other sounds, the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark, and deep, but I have promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I sleep. Thank you all for a really productive town hall.
Thank you everyone for joining us today, and for all our panelists and for everyone who attended today. Thank you.